Most of us only know lions from the zoo, and there they normally seem to be overgrown, lazy pussycats, but not always. Have a look at this little girl's encounter with a zoo lion in this YouTube video. Look at that. It's a good thing that glass is protecting the two. She didn't seem too fazed, but in today's storyline, we meet someone who did face lions with no protective glass. Welcome, I'm Chantal Klingbeil and this is Storyline. Thank you for joining me. We're coming to you live. Now this means that if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you're very welcome to do so throughout our show. It's simple and you can do it in a variety of ways. You can call toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE or use 707-200-1070 to call or text. And if you want more instant interaction, you can find Storyline on Facebook. Storyline is all about stories. Not bedtime stories or children's stories, but real true-to-life stories of Bible characters that faced issues, challenges, and faith questions. People who lived in times of crisis and change. In Storyline, we focus on these Bible characters. We look over their shoulders as they faced economic challenges, struggled with family problems, fell in love, faced illness, or even had their lives torn apart by war. As we step into their world to study life from their perspective, we look at their challenges, heartbreaks, victories, to find clues for our lives. Studying these Bible characters gives us new perspectives for our lives. And the best part of it all is that in these storylines, we find a God who loves us intensely and immensely. Some people are dog lovers. Others prefer cats as pets. I'll let you guess whether I'm a cat or a dog person, but I will say that cats have some nasty habits. All of the cat family seem to enjoy playing with their prey. For Daniel, it must have felt like the ultimate cat and mouse game. Masterful politics, political wheeling and dealing, all went into the hunt, and suddenly he finds himself walking straight into a trap. Even if you've heard the story before, take a second look. There's a lot more to this than meets the eye. If you have your Bible nearby, you can find this story in the book of Daniel, chapter 6. Let's rewind about 2,600 years ago. King Darius became king at the age of 62, and the first thing he did was reorganize. He divided his vast empire into 120 separate administrative units, and in charge of all of these were, of course, 120 governors. He placed three administrators over them, and Daniel was one of those three administrators. But Daniel was no rubber stamp bureaucrat. He did his work so well, so faithfully, that he by far outclassed the other two bureaucrats. And so the king decided to put him in charge of the whole administrative system. Tall trees catch the most wind. The two administrators and all the governors got together to try to organize a smear campaign against Daniel. But try as they might, they could find nothing. Daniel was faithful in his work. Daniel was trustworthy. He had no skeletons in his closet. Eventually they gave up. We'll never find anything against Daniel. Unless we can come up with something to do with his religion. And come up with something they did. All 120 governors, as well as the two administrators, got together and as a group went before the king. They had this grand new idea to help consolidate the king's power over his vast empire. They had drafted a decree. For the next 30 days, no one is to pray to any god or mortal except you, O king. Anyone who disobeys will be thrown into the lion's den. They made sure they put the full weight of the law behind this decree. They realized that when the king discovered their motivation, he would try to back out, and they wanted to make sure they had every legal advantage in this power struggle with the king. King Darius signed the decree. Daniel learned that this decree had been passed. His house had windows in the upstairs, and it had been his custom for years to go to the window, open it, and pray towards Jerusalem. He had done this 3 times every day for a long time. The trap had been set and baited. Daniel knew what was at stake. What would Daniel do? Daniel went home, went to his window, opened it, knelt down, and prayed to God. Things were going exactly according to plan. The administrators went straight to the king with the decree which he had signed and reminded him, "Did you not," they said, "sign a decree forbidding anyone to pray to any god or man except you for the next 30 days? And anyone caught doing so would be thrown into the lion's den?" "Well, Daniel is ignoring your orders." At this, the king realized that he had been manipulated. He was angry and upset, and he tried his very best to get Daniel out of this fix that he had gotten him into. He worked at it all day long. He tried everything, but legally, there was no way out. This was power politics. The administrators had won. The outside of the den was sealed off. The king went back to his palace. He couldn't eat. He couldn't sleep. The night passed slowly. Early the next morning, at the very break of dawn, the king was back at the lion's den. It seemed silly, but he just had to do it. He called in, "Daniel, has the God that you've served so faithfully, has he been able to save you from the lions?" Unbelievably, Daniel's voice comes back from the lion's den. "O king, live forever. My God, who I serve, was able to save me from the mouth of the lion. He sent his angel." The king is overjoyed. He orders Daniel pulled out of the lion's den, and unbelievably, there's not even a scratch on Daniel. This God that Daniel served so faithfully has come through for him. Imagine spending a night with the lions. I remember sleeping out in a tent in a game park in South Africa. Of course, the camping area was fenced in. This time, the humans were in the cage and the animals were roaming free. But I remember hearing a lion roar far away, and yet I could feel the vibrations coming off the ground. It was an awesome experience. I'll never forget it. And yet I don't think that Daniel was concentrating on the lions. He must have been far more fascinated with that being that was keeping the lions' mouths shut. We have with us today another Daniel, Pastor Daniel McKibben. Has had first-hand experience with wild lions. Welcome to Storyline.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's great that you could join us. He has a very exciting story to tell us of this close encounter. So stay with us. We'll be back in a minute.
Because of you, Hope Channel is reaching lives around the world.
To me, the Hope Channel is life-changing. To be able to listen to the Hope Channel, to watch it, to hear and to learn and to just soak it all up, it is amazing. I probably could have earned an associate degree in the amount of time that I spent. I was like a sponge to water, just soaking up every word and their health message and their sermons and their Bible studies and everything about them.
Hope Channel is changing lives because of the support of viewers like you. If you'd like to assist financially with the mission of Hope Channel, call us at 888-4-HOPE-TV.
For most of us, an encounter with a lion is something we have at the zoo with glass or bars, keeping us safe. But what happens when there are no bars? I have with me Pastor Daniel McKibben, who got closer to one or more of these felines than he would have liked. So welcome again to Storyline.
Thank you, Chantel.
Now, first of all, I have to ask, you didn't meet a Daniel lion, right? What I would think of as an African lion.
No, I met four mountain lions when I was in Canada.
Mountain lions?
Yes.
So what's the difference between a mountain lion and an African lion?
A mountain lion is smaller, but besides that, they're exactly the same. Same amount of claws and paws and teeth, and they eat, they're carnivorous animals. Mm-hmm. They eat animals and humans, and so they're almost the exact same, but they're smaller.
They're smaller, just a little smaller version, but you made up for it in numbers.
That's right, that's right.
Now, a mountain lion, you said that they do eat people.
Yes, yes.
So they are not afraid to attack humans?
No, as a matter of fact, there's been several joggers who were jogging in the mountains and a mountain lion attacked them. And actually, it's not wise to jog in the mountains mm-hmm. because it gets a mountain lion's instinct going. When they see something running, then okay. instinctively they say, that's
prey.
My prey.
Yes. Yes, and I think we have a picture back there of a mountain lion.
Yeah, that's a beautiful picture.
That look familiar?
It looks very, very familiar, yes.
So, tell us, what happened?
Well, I was in Canada, and I was way out in the wilderness, way out there, and I had traveled there, and I was quite exhausted. So that next morning, what I do, no matter where I travel, is I have my quiet time out in nature. I just love nature. It's a revelation of God. So I went down to this river, probably 3 or 4 miles from the lodge, found a sunny spot. I was exhausted. I actually fell asleep in the sun down by the river. Well, the mm-hmm. next day I went down to do the same thing, had my quiet time. I had my little pocket Bible with me. And this time I was not tired, wasn't going to take a nap. So okay. I sat above the river. And as I was looking down the river.
You were just sitting and relaxing there?
That's right.
You didn't sense anything amiss?
No, no, nothing at all. Nothing at all. I couldn't hear anything unusual or anything.
Well, cats do have padded.
Yes, yes.
Feet.
Yes, they are. And they're hunters, and so they know how to sneak up on their prey. Mm-hmm. And so I was sitting here about 50 feet above the river, and then I saw a mountain lion come out of the forest on my right side. And he came out into the opening, and I was so excited, Chantel.
You were excited?
Absolutely.
You mean nervous?
No, 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 not nervous at all. I was excited. I'd always wanted to see a live mountain lion in the wild. Zoos are kind of boring to me because they're just lazy and doing nothing.
Right.
But here's a real one right here in the wild. And
okay.
so I stayed real quiet. I didn't want to scare it away because I wanted to observe it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it darted back into the forest from where it came from. And I thought, ah, too bad. I must have scared him or he smelled me or something like that. Well, that was not the case. Out came two mountain lions. And then behind those two were two more mountain lions.
So you'd run into a whole family group.
Yes, that's right.
Now, at this point, were you getting nervous?
I was now getting nervous. My joy was turning into a little bit of fright.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
And so they came out, and the spot I'd been sleeping in the day before, they came up right to that spot and smelled around. Obviously, they got my scent.
This is where you'd been lying and sunning
Actually
yourself.
Took a nap the day before. Yes, so that's kind of a frightening thought in it of itself.
And they seemed very interested in very, whatever they were smelling.
Really. Yes, that's right. They were obviously hunting that morning. And so after they finished that spot there, then they were following a game trail. Now, a game trail is where deer and bears and lions and stuff make a path, natural path. And so they started following that back because they got off of it to go sniff over there. And guess
was
who
this was, path leading in your direction?
Well, guess who was sitting on the path and he didn't know it. And so I was sitting there, and all of a sudden these lions turned. They were facing away from me. I had no problem with them. Now all of a sudden they turn. They're coming straight towards me at a fast walk. They weren't running, but they were walking very fast.
My first instinct would have been to run. How did you feel?
My first instinct was actually to pray. Now, I didn't pray for the missionaries in Africa. I just said, God, help me. That's all I said.
This wasn't a kneel down kind of a prayer either.
No. It was just a very quick, instantaneous prayer. They were now about 50 feet away from me, walking very quickly towards me. They had no idea I was there. And so as soon as I prayed that prayer, instantly, three things came to my mind. You see, I lived in the mountains in Colorado at Eden Valley at that time. And we had had a few years before a mountain lion come down out of the mountains and kill one of our dogs and eat it. And so
you knew what they were capable of.
Absolutely.
So someone came and actually spoke to you about mountain lions.
That's right. The ranger came out and he said, here's what to do if you meet a dangerous wild animal. And three things he said is get a rock or a stick. And if they attack you, sometimes you can beat them off. He was always talking about one lion, not four. And then he said, make yourself look big. And the third thing is yell before they get too close to you, because if they get too close, they'll feel cornered and attack you. And so those three things.
Did those three things.
I did those three things. I had a stick. I actually found a stick on the ground right next to it. Just fallen off of a tree.
She just grabbed it.
And so I just grabbed it. I wasn't thinking. I just grabbed it off the ground, stood to my feet, tried to make myself look big like this. And I'm not a big person, so it's kind of comical. And then I said, hey, really loud towards that lion, towards those four lions. And so the leader of the pack, she stopped and crouched down and got on all four. Well, she was on all fours and got ready to pounce. Right, getting ready to pounce on me.
That wasn't a good sign.
No, not at all. The bristles came up on the back of her neck. She showed me her teeth. She hissed at me, and her ears laid down. And so she was in the pouncing position to get on me. And by this time, she's now about 20 or 30 feet away from me. And so we are now staring each other in the eyes for maybe 5 or 10 seconds.
That must have been the longest 5 or 10 seconds.
Yeah, you're not sure, because when the adrenaline's pumping, time means nothing to you. So it could have been 20 minutes. No. But anyway, it felt like 20 minutes. It was a very long time. And so we stared each other down. And after about 5 or 10 seconds, she decided not to jump on me, not to fight me. And here's what I'm thinking in my own mind is, how am I going to deal with this?
Yes.
And, you know, that type of thing. But actually, I just didn't have time to think. It was so fast. So she backed down 2 or 3, 4 steps, turned around and ran. And then the other three followed her and they ran off.
Whoa. That must have been a tremendous adrenaline surge.
Oh, it was. I thought, the first thing I thought is get back to the lodge where there's safety. And I tried to walk, my legs wouldn't move. It was like spaghetti legs or rubber band legs. And I finally got them moving and started
walking. So this was a real Daniel's prayer again. Daniel in the lion's den. Daniel in the open.
Yes, that's right. And something kind of comical is, as I'm going back to the lodge, I've got this stick in my hand, and my senses are coming back, and I say, you know, this stick is kind of light. I wonder why. And I hit it on a rock, and it just shattered into 100 different pieces.
You had a lot of protection there.
I did. I was going to beat off 4 mountain lions with a rotten old stick. So I threw it down and got a nice solid one and walked back to the lodge.
Well, Daniel, that was an exciting modern-day Daniel in the Lion's Den story.
Yes.
I'm glad you're staying with us as we get into the story.
Now there's more to it.
Yes, well, we're going to have to wait to hear that. Good. You'll want to hear that because right after the break, we'll be back. We'll hear more from Daniel and we'll have other special guests join us. So we'll be right back.
Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing does he withhold from those whose walk is blameless. Lord Almighty, blessed is the one who trusts in you.
As I was reading through the Great Hope, these words caught my attention. The framers of the Constitution of the United States recognized the eternal principle that man's relation with God is above human legislation. The Bible was held by the Pilgrim Fathers as the foundation of faith. Here's why this vision brings hope to me. I have seen the fruits of this faith and this vision in the lives of my grandparents who sacrificed their lives in Soviet Russia to protect the freedom to choose how to worship, to defend the oppressed, to defend the minorities. It gave meaning to their lives.
One of the biggest mistakes that people make after a marital breakup is to jump into another relationship far too soon.
We believe that it takes 2 to 3 years for an individual to work through the hurts of a failed marriage, examine what went wrong, perhaps see a counselor and talk through some of what has happened, admit the fact that you may have some bad habits and work to getting rid of those habits.
In addition to getting rid of habits, you need to consider whether or not you've really healed emotionally from the previous relationship and whether or not you're ready to enter into a new intimate relationship with someone else. Seek professional counsel, allow yourself to go through the process of healing and being ready for a new relationship. A good rule of thumb is to move slowly and carefully with God's help through prayer.
A stone was pushed over the mouth of the lion's den, and the king and the nobles sealed it into position and left. The king spent a sleepless night wondering about what was happening in the den. The king felt isolated. Fortunately, you don't have to feel isolated, because Storyline is all about connecting and including you. We have all sorts of tools to help us connect and communicate. You can call us, text us, find Storyline on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, download the app, or subscribe to the HD podcast. You have options. And we enjoy hearing how Storyline has impacted your life. You'll notice that we're tackling many of the stories that you, the viewers, have requested. And a big thank you to all of you who have contacted Storyline with comments and questions. We enjoy interacting with you. Lions often hunt as a family group, at least even mountain lions, as we heard with Daniel. We have, again, a great team to help us hunt down the experiences, the themes, and the action in Daniel's story, which, of course, we find in Daniel chapter 6. Very fittingly, we have Pastor Daniel McKibben. We were speaking to him a moment ago about his four mountain lion experience. It seems like you definitely share more than just a biblical name with our Bible hero.
I certainly do. They used to call me Daniel in Revelation when I first started coming to church. Now they call me Daniel in the lion's den.
Well, let's hope you're not in the lion's den again in here on Storyline.
Oh, I don't know. It's pretty fun.
a bit less dangerous.
Yes, yes.
And we have Sergio Gonzalez.
Yes.
Now, Sergio, you are a familiar face.
Well, maybe.
And if you're not a familiar face, well, then you are missing out because you would want to be watching Cross Connections. on a Tuesday with Sergio and Oleg. Well, thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having us.
You're ready for Daniel?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Well, I guess we should begin by talking about Daniel's world, because it's probably a little different to our world. And there seemed to be a thing with lions back then. The king keeps a den of lions handy. I'm guessing it wasn't the public zoo either. We have a picture back here. I believe this comes from the Persian time period. It's pretty interesting. How do you like it?
Good. It's a man's head and a lion's body and wings on that lion.
So it seems that lions were somewhat important, even half lions.
Right. Weird, strange lions.
This must probably be symbolizing some of that majesty and power of, of a lion that I've guessed was a real badge of honor back then.
Yes, it was. And as you mentioned, you know, the kings would actually have a cage of lions or a den of lions, and that kind of showed their power and authority and kind of their entertainment as well, as we're going to see later on in this story here.
Well, there's another magnificent lion from this time period. This lion I find really exciting, the picture of this lion is, at least. This is the lion from the processional way just outside the Ishtar Gate of Babylon. And although we're talking Medo-Persia, Medo-Persia has just conquered Babylon.
That's right. And they've adopted some of their practices.
And this is a beautiful lion. How do you like that mouth? You see, it's open and the teeth are, are kind of sticking out. And beautiful, the brickwork.
Yes, yes.
This is definitely a culture where lions are important back here.
Yeah.
Do you think lions would carry the same kind of majesty today?
Oh, I think they do. There are some countries who exalt lions as well, even in today's world, and certainly they're called the king of the jungle. Actually, elephants are probably the king. But certainly they have that connotation of power and majesty in today's world.
Yeah, and really looking at it in the context of the story that we're doing now, you see how lions are emblematic of the culture of the time, particularly the ruling power of the time, which kind of sets up this basic dichotomy that we have in this story, which is the kingdom of that time represented by lions, and then you have Daniel serving a different kingdom.
A different kingdom, and one that doesn't even seem to be visible or have any sort of visible sign out here.
And even one of the tribes of Israel was called the tribe of the lion, and Jesus came through the line of Judah. And so even spiritually speaking, biblically speaking, the lion was a very important animal. It showed majesty and power and strength.
Yeah. Now, we have this king who turns, I mean, the king is supposed to be one of the central figures here. He turns out to be a bit of a pawn as well in the story. We have Darius. His age is mentioned just before we begin chapter 6. In chapter 5, we hear that he was 62 when he takes the throne. That's a pretty ripe age for any ruler to begin. Do we have any idea how old Daniel was?
Well, probably 70s or 80s. He was getting on in age, and we always like to read Daniel 1. He's a young man, 18 years old, and we don't think that, he was an older man, and no matter how healthy you are, you do start feeling a bit feeble, and so this was quite a trial for an older man his age.
You think it made a big difference?
Yeah, I mean, I think the place that he was in his life, again, kind of sets up where this story goes, because it's what he has accomplished or what God has accomplished through him, the kind of position that he has gained, that's what sets up a lot of the jealousy and feelings that the people that try and set him up have. So certainly it's, you know, something where through his age, at this point of his life, he's done a little bit of something with himself, and that's kind of leading to the problems that happened later.
This is kind of a climax then to his life experience.
Yeah.
Sort of high noon showdown time.
Right.
It would seem.
It depends on what you call a climax, because the latter chapters he gets the visions, the prophetic visions from God, and I think they're very, very wonderful.
You think that's even bigger and better than this last showdown?
I don't know.
Well, you should have a special insight over here, seeing that this is probably your favorite Bible story?
It's one of my favorites. I love the story of Joseph, and I can read that over and over again. And I love the story of Daniel. I love the story of Ruth. I mean, there's tons of them I love. I do like Daniel in the Lion's Den. It's a special story.
That's a special one. I guess it's one of the first ones we hear as children as well.
Yeah.
The king signs this very strange law. Mm. Let's have a look at this law over here. It isn't his own doings, but we do have him sign this law. What does this law entail over here?
Well, basically that for 30 days, no one can worship or any man or pray to any man or God besides the king.
The king.
Yeah.
Why would the king sign something like this?
I guess it's flattering, you know. Like, you know, there's got to be some kind of, you know, when you reach that point and you're a king, it's not hard to get a little bit full of yourself, I guess.
Yeah, and there's certainly politicking going on here. And when you get up high up in a position, I mean, he was in a very, very powerful mm-hmm. position. When you get into that position, then people are politicking below you mm-hmm. and trying to fight for the highest place. And so certainly in this story, there was politicking. And they appealed to his vanity and his pride, and it worked beautifully.
Well, and even him on his end, he is basically starting a new kingdom, replacing an older one. It certainly makes sense on a certain level to see, okay, this actually is a smart
law. A law like this makes sense?
Yeah, because you say, well, from my perspective, let's see who's on my side then. You know, let's see who's against us and who's for us. You know, this is something that can make sense. Let's weed out those and find out those who really haven't come on board yet, and we'll deal with them however we want to deal with them, and we'll see who's
my side.
Exactly.
Well, the strategy they seem to use, or seems to be used later on, often we think of emperor worship in Roman times as well. So this was, they've just conquered. Medo-Persia has just taken over on the world scene. And this is not just one god conquering another god, I'm suspecting. Mm. There's a lot of regional gods and regional loyalties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the different areas over here. How would this law affect the regional gods and the regional priests and all that kind of thing?
Well, they would certainly have to come and make a decision. Mm-hmm. You know, am I going to stroke his pride? And the answer is yes. I'm going to stroke his pride, because politicking takes all kinds of shades and colors and forms. And so they would certainly be behind this, and they would say, yep, no problem. I won't pray to any of these other gods, I'll just pray to the king, no big deal.
For a short time.
Yeah.
For a short time period, it'll work.
A little compromise gets me higher in the world. Hey, let's go.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
Well, Daniel realizes that this is a stupid law, I think, functioning only really to get him. But is this a good example that we can follow? You know, identify the stupid laws and just keep doing our own thing. After the break, we'll explore this question and other questions, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a headache? There's some people who have never had a headache. What lucky people they are. But most of us have had a headache. I'm not talking about migraines. Migraines are really doozers of a headache. And people who get a migraine probably require special medication. But I'm talking about the ordinary sort of headache that you get when you've been overstressed, perhaps working too hard, maybe you're tired, just the general run-of-the-mill headache. Those headaches can be at the back of your head, the side of your head, the front of your head, and I think a lot of people take too many pills. So I'd like to recommend something that's been found to be successful in perhaps 70% of the people who use it. I'm just talking about a very simple thing. What I've got here is a polar pack. It's an ice pack. Apply this to where the head aches. The back of the head, temple, or brow.
In case you've just joined us, we're discussing the story of Daniel in the Lion's Den in Daniel chapter 6. Now, Daniel has realized that this law is functioning to get him. And, well, I'm wondering, sometimes it seems like laws are out to get me, or that laws should apply to everyone else except me. I think of when I'm, you know, stuck with some speed limit or something.
Every ticket I get, I think that, yeah.
So how should we as Christians relate to laws that perhaps we don't quite see the value in?
Well, naturally, we're not going to like the law when the law catches us breaking the law. Mm-hmm. There's a penalty, financial, and if it's bad, it's going to jail, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're not going to like that. However, we must admit, for instance, in America, most of the laws here are very good and reasonable, most of them, not all of them. And so, yeah, I'm happy to keep the laws, but sometimes I'm not happy to. Like Sergio mentioned, yeah. I don't, you know, if you're in a hurry, you want to speed down the road.
Okay, and is that an excuse if we don't see the wisdom behind a law?
Well, the key thing here is that this law is asking Daniel to break God's law. Mm-hmm. And it's something that would actively come directly in between him and his God. And there a couple times in the text, they make mention of this new law that they pass. Mm-hmm. It says that cannot be broken. They mention that a couple times, referring to this mm-hmm. law of man. Mm-hmm. So there's this element of cannot be broken, cannot be broken. It seems to be, you know, whenever I took an English class, they tell you to look out for like these themes that get pointed out more than once, you know. And it seems to be a theme here, this cannot be broken. And so we now have God's law. Well, can God's law be broken? Can you break God's law just to appease the law of man? And so Daniel is sticking firm that God's law, his relationship with God, is above anything and everything else.
So does Daniel have a history with run-ins with the law?
Well, I don't think he does. Not that I can remember. There were certainly times when he got in trouble by those who were making the laws. However, he wasn't breaking any of the man-made laws, so I can't think of anywhere he was doing that.
Yeah, and he was held in really high esteem. The king loved him, you know, but it also says, the New King James says, an excellent spirit was within him. Mm-hmm. You know, he had, you know, we can guess what that spirit is. He had the Holy Spirit in him, and that's what was always guiding him, and that's what he always put first. That's what the source of his faithfulness is that he always had God within him, and now this law comes along that he's supposed to cut that law.
Right.
Not only cut off his relationship with God, but reject God and claim that Darius, and only worship Darius. I mean, it's just something he
can't do. And I think it's important here that we understand in Daniel chapter 1, it says that he was brought into tender favor with the prince of the eunuchs, meaning he had not only a really great spirit about him, but he had a tenderness about him. His character was a very nice character. We see people, sometimes Christians say, oh, I'm not going to keep the laws of man, and they have a really nasty spirit about them.
Yeah.
I don't think this is what Daniel was like.
That's a great point.
Well, if we go back to chapter 6, we find probably the greatest proof of what you're saying over here. Chapter 6, verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. That's the whole political system. That's what he's doing. That's his work. That's his life history.
Everything. That's the speed limit. That's all the laws. Really,
right. It's it.
Yeah.
But they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him.
Mm-hmm.
No skeletons. That's quite something. I'm pretty sure if we dig in most of ours, things can come up.
That's where a place where I don't relate to Daniel at all.
No skeletons. To live a life in God's eye.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the story of Joseph that you were referring to over there, where Joseph is tempted by Potiphar's wife, and he says, how can I do this great sin against God? He felt he was living in God's sight all the time.
And by honoring God's law, he got into trouble short term. Actually, it's kind of long term. He ended up in prison for 7 years. However, in the long run, he honored God and he was exalted to the prince prime minister in his region. And so when we obey God against man's law, sometimes we get in trouble, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the getting in trouble moment, because you can't read the story of Daniel in the lion's den without thinking of the Colosseum, and years later, lions and other wild animals actually tearing the Christians apart. Now, how come Daniel gets saved from the lions, but these other Christians later on aren't saved?
You know, we can only guess at that, and we have to bow down to the great I Am. And sometimes the mysteries of God, actually oftentimes the mysteries of God are beyond our comprehension. And I've been talking to atheists lately, and they get really angry when Christians say that, but it's the truth. Atheists don't have a better answer to that. Their answer is, well, I don't know. Christians' answer is, we have a sovereign God who knows better than we do.
So you're basically saying, well, it's okay. We don't quite see it, but it's okay.
Well, and I think it's important to note, too, that we live in a horrible, sinful world where the will of God is not always done. You know, that's why in the Lord's Prayer we are asked to pray, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven, because on earth it's not always done as it is in heaven. Horrible things happen. There's wickedness in this world. There's sin in this world. And the lesson of this story to me isn't that if a bad thing happens to you, God is always going to poof and go away. Yeah, and it's about serving God, and that God ultimately can save. And, you know.
So you're saying it's really big picture thinking.
Yeah.
Our lives are small, and there's a bigger reality out there. There's the war between good and evil.
Well, let me just give you a very short story for an example here. I was driving in the mountains with some health guests a few years ago, and one of my guests got car sick because we were in the windy roads there. We had to pull over and let him throw up, and we say that's a bad thing, right? Throwing up. Nobody likes that. Well, we got back on the road a few minutes later, and it was a little bit icy. Somebody from the opposite lane slid over into our lane. We were going for a head-on collision. I braced myself for the impact. Last second, he pulled out, and we just missed each other. If that man had not gotten car sick and we had to stop for him, then we would have had a head-on collision. And so the small picture, what a terrible thing that he threw up on the side of the road. But the big picture is that it saved a head-on collision. We had five people in that car. And so God can take a bad circumstance and turn it around for good.
Big picture thinking.
Yes.
Big picture thinking. Well, we're going to talk big picture here, too. We're going to talk politics.
Yes.
Politics is a hot topic, at least right now in the United States, because it's just before election time. And there's a lot of politics in the story, but there's also a lot of religion. So should we be actively pushing a Christian agenda, perhaps in government, that we can make our religious views law? Wouldn't that make for a bigger, better country? Well, after the break, we'll be back with this question.
As I was reading The Great Hope, this phrase caught my attention. When the Savior was about to be separated from his disciples, he comforted them in their sorrow with the assurance that he would come again. He said, "Let not your heart be troubled. In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself." John 14:1-3. Here is why this brings me hope. The angels repeated this promise. John, Paul, many writers have reminded us of this. All through the ages, hope of the faithful has been looking forward to Christ's return. I see suffering, pain, persecution, sorrow all around, and I know that soon this will end when Christ fulfills his promise.
We've been speaking about Daniel's story found in Daniel chapter 6. This seems to be a very timely story. There's a lot in the news at the moment about religiously motivated problems, disturbances worldwide. And these are things that we have to face around about us. And I guess people that aren't religious in any way often find religion to be fanatical. Mm-hmm. And this story of Daniel could perhaps look fanatical. Mm. Where's the room for compromise here? Why didn't Daniel, why didn't he take such a hard tack line? You know, go up there to his room, and the Bible makes the point of telling us that he opens his window towards Jerusalem, like he does every day, and he prays.
You know, an idea that I hear thrown around a lot now is that it's important not to believe in anything too strongly, because that leads to conflicts and that leads to disunity and all these different things. Yeah, exactly. But really, when it comes to serving God, you know, there's no compromise. You know, there's no such thing as loving God too much, because there's no such thing as him loving us too much. So this is something we're seeing here. I mean, Daniel didn't go picketing when he didn't like this law. He didn't go, this is unfair. He didn't go to the king and say, you really should change this. He just kept loving God, serving God, praying to God.
I like this dimension that you've brought in here. It seems to be almost opposite. We're talking laws. We're talking unfair laws, strange laws, state laws. We're talking politics. And yet you're talking love. How did the two mesh together here?
Well, I think it's important to point out here is that Daniel, when he was obeying God's law, and that forced him to disobey the king's law, that was the highest form of love. And when you love God supremely, automatically it shows love to your fellow man supremely as well. But we get it upside down, and we love man more than God, and guess what happens to that love? It becomes impure and
leads to all sorts of strange forms.
Right. So compromise is important in any human relationship. We know that. If you're married, you know that. You have to compromise, because if you always have it your way, your marriage is going to fall apart. And so you have to compromise and say, okay, it's okay to do it this way. It's not offending God. It's not against God's law. No big deal. But as Sergio pointed out, we have got to, when it comes to God and his law, we have to be uncompromising on that.
Yeah.
There's no room for compromise.
Yeah, and there's no. It's interesting to note that Daniel, he didn't. He wasn't angry with the king. He wasn't yelling at him. He wasn't saying how unjust anything was. He just continued to serve his God defiantly. And even when the king called after him, once he opened the stone, he said, "King, may you live forever." You know, he's super nice to the guy. You know, even though he just sentenced him to death. You know, there's nothing but love, and you can see the Spirit of God is in Daniel.
And you know, you asked earlier. You stated earlier he opened his window. It just seemed like such a defying act. But Jesus said, you are the light of the world. And how are we going to be the light of the world when we are just softy? Well, sometimes we were the light of the world then, but sometimes we are the light of the world when we stand up for what's right. And you know what? There's people in the background who say, I admire that person for standing up for what's right, even though it means death.
And I like your comparison that both of you were drawing with a marriage relationship or a love relationship. As long as you're loving a person, there's no limits on it. But as soon as a third person comes in, it's a compromise on that loving relationship. And in a loving relationship, there just isn't room for loving someone else for a third person in a marriage relationship.
No.
And this is something that Daniel understands crystal clear.
Yes. Yeah, and you mentioned politics and pushing the Christian agenda and all of that. I won't go into that too much.
But well, that's where we want to go.
Well,
yeah.
Then the Christian agenda, to me, I never understand when it's articulated so complicated and all of these strange words. The Christian agenda is what we're talking about. It's love. It's loving God. It's loving your neighbor. And we talk about all these specific things, and you hear so the arguments can get so vicious, and there's no love in them, and it's pointing fingers and anger, and there. To me, that's you're breaking the Christian agenda by doing that. The Christian agenda is love.
Well, let's take that further. How should I, as a Christian, relate to good intentions, maybe political movements, that are perhaps suggesting that we should return back to legislating maybe more morality in our society?
Yeah, this is a really complicated one. You cannot legislate morality. You can't force morality. Now,
why can't you force morality? If there's a law, people can keep it, and that'll help everyone get better?
Well, you can force the last four commandments. Don't kill, steal. It used to be commit adultery, but no longer in our laws. You can't lie. Okay, those three commandments, I'll take those three since today's world has thrown out that fourth one, is that certainly we can enforce that. You can't steal, kill, or tell lies. But what if we go to the first four commandments and say you can't worship idols, or you can only worship God only, or you have to keep the Sabbath day? If I force that on you or force that on you legally, then I'm actually making you a hypocrite because you don't have it in your heart. You're just doing it because I said to, and you're going to be penalized if you don't do what I tell you to do.
Yeah, I mean, you look at God's law and God's kingdom and a civic government. They exist for two entirely different reasons. A civic government exists to uphold the peace, to uphold the well-being of its citizens. That's why it enacts these laws in order to keep things in check. Mm-hmm. But God's law seeks something so much more transformative. You know, it looks to transform your heart.
Exactly.
And that's what it's all about. Jesus, Pharisees always came to him with these little laws and little things like that, and he said, I care about your heart. That's what I care about.
That is such an important point, and I think that should be the real core point of this whole discussion we're having here is God's after our heart. Mm-hmm. And so when the Christians are out there politicking and they're trying to push the Christian agenda or the far right agenda, then they can, first of all, be offensive to non-Christians, but secondly, history has told us for the last 2,000 years, especially during the Dark Ages, that whenever state and religion combine, and whenever the religious people enforce a law, persecution is the result of that. And the Dark Ages, millions, 50 to 100 million people died because of what we're talking about right now is the Christian right got in there and said, it's our way or no way. And guess what? Our way comes from the Bible, so it's got to be right.
Mm-hmm. So there's definitely this freedom to choose that God seems to value very highly because you have to choose to love.
He values it so highly that he allowed Lucifer to go against his government, gave him a free will to do that, gave Adam and Eve a free will to go against his government, and it brought us into this horrible sin situation. God values our freedom tremendously, and so we should value one another's freedom.
Well, we're speaking real respect here.
Yes.
Respect for other people's opinions, respect for other people's views.
That's right. Whether they're Jehovah's Witness or Mormons or atheists or anybody, we need to respect their views. Now, if they become offensive, then we may need to deal with
respect
that.
Respect would be the name of the game, because really what God's after is a change of heart.
Mm. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I don't want us to end this story without hearing very briefly what the best part was for you. Mm. Because this is where we really hear what spoke to you.
Mm. Well, you know, to me, whenever I read a story, I always try and ask myself, where's the gospel in this? You know, and to me, you read this, you hear the story so much as a kid, mm-hmm. but to me, what stood out for me, going over it again, we know Daniel's faithfulness to me was at the end where God is being described by Darius's decree, and you see that he rescues and saves. Mm-hmm. And that's the gospel. There it is summed up. That's the God that we serve. He rescues and he saves.
In a nutshell, he rescues and he saves. Mm-hmm. That's our God.
Yeah.
Great. Yes, please.
Now, I hate to admit it, but my favorite part of this story is when the underdog is brought up and the bully is brought down. Mm. And I guess it's because I've been bullied a little bit in my life, and I hate to admit it, I've bullied others as a child. And so the very end part of the story, you know, Daniel's enemies are thrown into the lion's den and they're eaten before they touch the bottom.
Yeah, that's the gruesome part of the story, and that's your favorite part.
But you know, it shows the justice. Now, God didn't ordain this and God didn't do it, but it certainly shows that justice is a part of God's government just as much as mercy is.
Serving God won out. Yeah.
One day, justice will prevail.
That's right.
That's what really inspires you in the story,
Daniel. And one day, the underdog will be uplifted and the bully will be put down.
Things won't be as they are forever.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for exploring the story with me. It was great to have you, Sergio, and great to have you, Daniel, with us.
It was fun.
If you came halfway through the program and missed out on part of it, don't worry. It's not all lost. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline and you can watch this episode and any other episode at your leisure. And if you want to share your reaction to the story, you can go to our website or post on Facebook and Twitter. And remember, Storyline is available in the iTunes store as a podcast. You can download the entire episode and you can watch it on the go. Now, don't go anywhere. There's still more right after this break.
Whatever your anxieties and trials, spread out your case before the Lord. Your spirit will be braced for endurance. The way will be open for you to disentangle yourself from embarrassment and difficulty. The weaker and more helpless you know yourself to be, the stronger will you become in His strength. The heavier your burdens, the more blessed the rest in casting them upon your burden bearer.
It's an old story, but the story of Daniel still challenges me. Through all those strange twists and turns of his long life above position, influence, wealth, power, or national allegiance, Daniel was first and foremost God's man. Daniel's faith reached to the unseen and grasped eternal realities. He wasn't willing to trade those eternal realities for anything. Will God always close the lion's mouth for me like He did for Daniel? You know, I don't know. He hasn't promised that, but He has promised something else. As Paul puts it in Romans 8, can anything cut us off from the love of Christ? Can hardships or distress or persecution or lack of food and clothing or threats or violence? For I am certain of this, neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nothing already in existence and nothing to come, nor any power will be able to come between us and the love of God. I would like to invite you to put the plot of your storyline into the hands of the God of Daniel, a God who can turn a mess into a message, a test into a testimony, a trial into triumph. And a victim like Daniel, God can change into a victor.